and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm your host, Tom Haynes, and this week we're going to answer a question that I saw recently. Someone asked, can someone please explain non-radar? And then, how can I identify traffic just using the flight progress strips? So, a couple of really good questions. Obviously, someone who is in the non-radar portion of the academy right now. And so for that person and anyone else who is in a similar situation or about to be there, we can go over that a little bit. So non-radar, obviously, by the name, is just separating airplanes, getting airplanes where they need to go, using separation methods that don't involve having the airplane actually on radar. And I have actually worked a facility that was a non-radar approach control. Brownsville, when I got there, was a level one non-radar approach control. It had just been downgraded from a level two. But we used non-radar methods to get traffic in and out of South Texas. There were actually two non-radar approach controls in South Texas, Brownsville and McAllen. Brownsville, we worked aircraft into two different airports. And I can tell you from experience, it ain't easy in the real world. Okay, now what we did at Brownsville is totally different from what the academy is. And if you think that you'll never see non-radar, I actually saw non-radar while I was at Fort Worth Center. We had a sector where they would routinely take the radar out for quote-unquote maintenance, but also for training of the tech ops people. Okay, and so we would be non-radar at or below, I think the Altitude was 14,000, if I remember right. And so everything below 14,000 had to be on a non-radar route. They couldn't be direct because there was no way to separate them. And we did have an airport right in the middle of the sector that had commercial traffic going in and out. And so you may still experience non-radar from time to time. And then there are sectors. Of course, Oceanic is mostly non-radar, but they have their own set of rules. So that's a brief explanation of what non-radar is. Now, going to the academy and what the academy will teach you and what the academy will expect of you. And so the progression at the academy is fairly well thought out. They take you from telling you about the map, about what's on the map, making sure that you know all the details you need to know about the map. That's your foundation for doing non-radar. And from there, they start going into strip marking, phraseology, how to give a clearance, and things like that. So they start very basic and then start building you up and start giving you the information you need on how to separate airplanes in a non-radar environment. And you will use non-radar in a radar environment to get people off the ground, since we don't have radar on the ground in most places. You're going to have a non-radar clearance to get them airborne safely, and then you go from there. Once you get them in radar, there are some other things you can do. But back to non-radar, the lesson plans are fairly well thought out. They will get boring. Just there's no way around it. And then they start doing some part tasks and start getting you using the strip boards, getting you used to the different bay headers. And if you're not in non-radar yet, you won't know exactly what all this stuff is, but you know, just take my word for it. But they build you up and build you up and build you up, and then they start talking about separation and how to look for traffic. And looking for traffic and finding traffic is one of the most important skills you'll learn in non-radar. And it's a really good stepping stone for learning how to see traffic in a radar environment. So don't overlook it. Don't assume that you can not worry about non-radar and get all the points you need in radar. Get all the points that you can out of non-radar. And more importantly than that, get all the information out of non-radar. Get all the techniques out of non-radar. Get your habits of practicing and practicing and practicing out of non-radar, because you will need that once you get past non-radar and into radar. And so, how do you separate airplanes using just the strips and just the information on the strips? Well, let's take a Greenwood departure, for instance. So, you'll be taught in non-radar to do what? W-H-A-T. And that stands for the things that you need to look for when you are looking for traffic. The W is, where is the aircraft? And this really pertains to aircraft that are already in the air who may or may not be in your airspace. And so if you can't prove that they're in your airspace, then you have to give them a maintain altitude until they get to your airspace. Then you can start doing other separation. For our Greenwood departure, we know he's at the Greenwood Airport, so we don't really have to do a W. He doesn't have to maintain an altitude until he gets in our airspace. And so the H is holding. Is anyone in holding? Now, for our Greenwood departure, one of the things that we have to do in our checklist before the problem starts is we have to determine, do we have any Greenwood arrivals and do we have any Greenwood departures? Obviously, in our scenario, we do have a Greenwood departure. If we have a Greenwood arrival, then we have to determine who has priority, the arrival or the departure. If the departure has priority, we have to put the arrival in hold. If the arrival has priority, we're going to clear the arrival for the approach, and we're going to tell Greenwood Tower to use visual separation between the arrival and the departure. And so anytime we have arrivals and departures at Greenwood, there's going to be something we're going to have to do. We're either going to have to go into hold, or we're going to have to use visual separation. It's just the way it is. Okay, but that H in the what is holding, and you will have a map that gives you all the mileages to clear the holding pattern that you're going to have at each of your airports. You have to give that clearance, and for a departure, it's going to be at or below the altitude that you're holding at. So that's the first H, and it's in, you know, we have a Greenwood departure that's in our Sidon Bay, and you will learn what that is. And so we have to clear the holding pattern in the Sidon Bay. And like I said, it's going to be an at or below because we're departing off the ground. We can't very well just go straight up and go over the holding pattern. So we have to go at or below the holding pattern. And then the A in the what is airspace. do we have airspace that we have to miss? Well, all of our Greenwood departures have to miss the Columbus 3 MOA that's right by the Greenwood Airport. And so you will learn the restrictions required to miss that. And so what we're doing is we're writing these restrictions on a piece of paper. Always write them on a piece of paper. Do not try and remember them in your head, because invariably, while you're doing all of this, someone else calls, either another controller with a request or an airplane calls. And so if you don't write it on paper, you have to remember it while you're doing something else. So write it on paper every time for every aircraft that is moving or changing an altitude. Okay? Do it. You feel like you're going to lose time by writing it down, but you actually don't. Take my word for it. You will want to have it written down on paper. Okay? So we have to miss airspace. Well, then we have to miss traffic. And here comes the tough one. Because what is traffic, or who is traffic for this guy? So let's say we have a Greenwood departure. He's going just northbound. And he's climbing to 10,000 feet. And so when we're looking for traffic in the Sidon Bay, and since he's going northbound off of Greenwood, that's the only bay we're concerned with. We have to look at every aircraft in the Sidon Bay that is between the ground and the altitude that our departure wants, which is 10,000. We have to look at every single one of those aircraft, and then we have to determine, are they going to be within 10 minutes of each other? Are they actually traffic? Or can we eliminate them because they're going to be more than 10 minutes apart? And the departure in front of an overflight, 10 minutes doesn't matter because we don't know a specific time yet when the departure is going to get airborne. But say we have an overflight that's westbound, and at, we'll say, 8,000, but he's 10 minutes, he progresses side in 10 minutes before our guy is going to depart. Okay, well then they shouldn't be traffic because we have 10 minutes, and 10 minutes is our golden standard in non-radar. And so we look, everybody else, we have to come up with a restriction for each one. Now, and this is where it takes practice. It takes practice to get good at this. I will say this again. It takes practice to get good at this. You cannot just walk into the room and go, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Practice, practice, practice. And practice at a higher level with more intensity and with more difficulty, then you're going to have to play the game. And playing the game is that day of evals for non-radar. So you have to practice. This is something that doesn't come naturally to most people. And by most, I'm talking a good 80, 85, 90% of people. Non-radar does not come naturally to you. So if you're in that 80 to 90%, don't feel bad. There are a lot of people in there with you. Okay? So you have to look at each aircraft. Now, if you have an overflight in your Sidon Bay and he's at 12,000 feet or 15,000 feet, they're not traffic because your departure is not going to go that high. Okay? They are not traffic. You have eliminated them as traffic for this aircraft. Okay? That's how we look at traffic for departure. Now, let's say we have an arrival coming over. Let's start fairly easy. He's coming over Magnolia and landing Monroe. And so we have an altitude we descend them to in the Monroe Bay. But we have to look first at the Jackson Bay. And this is, again, where we go. We have our scratch paper. And we start. I would write down the call sign on scratch paper. And even write the bay header. You know, I'm not sure if they've changed the bay headers to Magnolia. They may have. And they may still have Jackson. It doesn't really matter. It's just a little detail. But so write the bay header, the bay name, and you're what? W-H-A-T. Where is he? Do we know? Has he progressed the vortex? If he has not, then you have to give him a maintain altitude. Maintain his present altitude until the mileage that's for that airway. Okay? And then you start looking at, okay, is there anybody holding that's landing in Jackson? And you write the restriction for it. Is there, there's airspace. Now, the Jackson airspace should be below the Monroe airspace. And so we will probably not have to miss the Jackson airspace. Okay. Then we start looking at traffic. And here again, let's say our arrival's at 10,000 going into Monroe. And so we need to look at every altitude between 10,000 and the altitude we give for the Monroe arrivals. Everyone in between there is considered traffic. Okay. And then we look at our sheet of paper after we've got all our restrictions. We figure out which restrictions we need, because if we have one that's a higher altitude, more restrictive than the others, then we don't need all of them. We just need the one. If there is one, the FAA allows us to combine them into the most restrictive one, because that will miss everybody. Okay. Now, we've done that for the Jackson Bay. We have to do the same thing for the Monroe Bay. Okay. This is what we call a two-stripper. And you have to do your what in each bay for the aircraft. This is why it's so important to follow your checklist when you're doing your 15 minutes before the problem starts. You go through your checklist, and you'll practice this in class. You'll go through it together. Okay? It's going to take you an hour to an hour and a half to go through it the first time. Well, when you're running scenarios, you have 15 minutes. And I can tell you that some of the initial scenarios, the beginning scenarios, that 15 minutes is going to be more than enough time to pre-plan the entire problem. But don't fall into the trap of thinking you're always going to be able to do that, because you're not. There are going to be scenarios towards the end where you can't get through all of yours. You're going to spend 10, 15 minutes just on your arrivals, and you won't even get to any of your departures. And so when you're doing your checklist, you have to do them in order. And your lead and A lead will talk to you. And we'll tell you, this is what you do. This is what you do. These are the steps that you do. You pre-plan your arrivals. They're already in the air. Your departures are on the ground. You do them last. A lot of people want to do them first. You do them last. They're on the ground. They cannot hurt you until you get them in the air. Okay? And I can tell you from experience, I was a non-radar instructor. I have been through the non-radar class We went through every lesson in a week. Not the 3.5 to 4 weeks that you guys get. We went through it in a week. And then the second week, we ran every scenario. All 27 in 5 days. So I've been through that. I have been right there with you trying to learn it and trying to understand. Now, I did have 26 years of air traffic experience to fall back on. But there's not a whole lot that can prepare you for learning non-radar. Yeah, it helped to have that background. And I kind of had some gut feelings as far as what mileages I was going to need to know more than others. But, and even on the map they give you that you're going to be able to use in your evals, it has your pre-planned checklist on it. You post the strips, you sequence the strips, you identify any Tux aircraft because they don't have DME. You identify the aircraft on frequency. Very important. Then you review the routes. Use the direction arrows. You have to for, I think it's the first 10 scenarios. It's a good idea. It gets you used to it. Okay. Then you identify your departures. Are they IOF DOF? Do you have anybody that's IOF DOF? Do you have any arrivals? The same route traffic. Victor 245. At or above 900,000. That's going to hit a MOA. Okay. Victor 11. At or above 8,000. That's going to hit another MOA. And you put red W's on the strips. You look to see if there are any FRCs, full route clearances, on your departure strips. Then you start looking for same altitude in the same bay, the same altitude with less than 10 minutes. They get red W's. Okay. This is all part of your checklist. You resolve the red W's first, whether it's airspace or aircraft-to-aircraft, red W. Resolve the red W's first. Okay? Then you pre-plan your arrivals. And you plan to block airspace for your Greenwood arrivals. And then, on this map with your pre-planned checklist, it doesn't say anything about pre-planning the departures, because those are extra. So what you want to do is establish your priorities. After you pre-plan your arrivals, you figure out what your priorities are at the beginning of the problem. And you're going to have some problems where you have to resolve the red W's within 2 minutes. Okay? You have to resolve them. Otherwise, you're going to have a separation error. So establish your priorities. And I would even write it on a sheet of paper. This is step one, this is step two, this is step three, this is step four. Once you've done that, then you can start pre-planning your departures and get to as many of them as you can. Okay? That's your pre-plan checklist. And then you go through that. What, when any time an aircraft is changing altitude, and we talked about the departure, he's changing altitude. You have arrivals. More than likely, they're changing altitude. Not all the time, but more than likely, they're going to change an altitude. Okay? So you have to do your what? Your WHAT. You just have to. You have to practice this. You have to get where this becomes as close to second nature as you can get it in a month and a half, because that's the amount of time you have. Some people only need to practice for maybe 20 hours to get good at it. Some people are going to need to practice for 60 hours to get good at it. Some are going to need to practice for 100 to get good at it. The point is, practice at it until you get good at it. And then you know what you have to do? You have to keep practicing. You have to keep getting better. Keep getting better. Keep getting better. Because when you walk into that room for your eval, especially your first one, you're going to have to rely on how good you've gotten. You're going to have to rely on everything you've learned in all those practice sessions. It's the only way to get through it. Okay? And so all the information you need is on the flight strips that you have. You don't get any extra ones. They don't add any airplanes in the middle. Nothing comes off the printer. The whole scenario is there at the beginning. You must have a good checklist, pre-planning checklist. You have to get as good as you can at that pre-planned checklist. And I would say after about scenario 16, just practice your pre-planning and going through the checklist. Okay? And I know I covered this in a much earlier podcast, but you can practice pre-planning. It only takes 15 minutes as opposed to taking 45 minutes to run a problem or to practice a problem. Okay, so you can pre-plan, practice pre-planning three problems in the same amount of time it takes you to run one full problem. And if you get really, really good at your pre-plan checklist, then you're going to have more confidence when the problem starts. And I can't emphasize enough just how important it is to have some confidence when that problem starts. If you know that you've done a good pre-planned checklist, it makes that problem so much easier. Okay? So, you can practice just your pre-planned checklist. If there are scenarios, different scenarios that trip you up when you're running scenarios in the classroom with your instructor, well, then go home and practice those. Practice the ones that trip you up. Get better at those. Okay? Now, having said all this about seeing traffic and how you see traffic, just remember, it's all about your strip marking and your phraseology. You can have a perfect plan, but if you don't know how to write it on a strip and you don't know how to say it, you know, it's kind of like that tree in the woods. Does it make a sound? You know, when you're in your eval, you can have the best pre-plan, but if you can't say it correctly, did the pre-plan actually exist? That's a good question. We'll have to get some air traffic control philosophers to debate that. But right now, the main thing is you have to practice. You have to take those basics that they give you that first week at the academy for non-radar. You have to take those basics and make them so strong that you can build other things on top of them. That is your foundation. The foundation is the map, your knowledge of the map. The foundation is your knowledge of how to write things on a strip, where everything goes, whether it goes in red or black, circle it in red, circle it in black, and how to say things. That's one reason why they do non-radar. It'll be the one time in Oklahoma City that you're actually talking to airplanes. In the tower program, in the radar terminal program, they get talked to airplanes all the time. It's what they do all the time. But when you get into the radar for en route, you're going to be talking to other controllers and the R side. You're not going to be talking to airplanes anymore. But so take the non-radar is the one time that you actually get to talk to pilots. Okay, it's your classmate across the room, but you're still talking to a pilot. So take the opportunity while you're a non-radar. Get used to talking on a radio. Get used to answering calls. Get used to saying things correctly. I had the best instructors all through my career at each facility. And the one at Brownsville, stickler for phraseology. The ones that I had at Fort Center, sticklers for phraseology. And it helped so much because I did not have to think about how to say something. I just said it. And, you know, there were times at Brownsville where being able to just see the situation, key up, and not even have to think about how to say it may have saved some lives. I told a guy to go around. He didn't have his gear down. And all I had to do, I didn't even have to think about it. I just keyed up and told him the textbook phraseology for going around. Gear appears up. And he did thank me on his downwind when he came back around. And he said we were going to land. I almost told him, no, you were going to crash. But I didn't. Okay. Phraseology has to become second nature. You're learning a language. The strip marking is learning how to write that language. You have to know those things. Then you have to know the grammar. You have to know the techniques. You have to understand the map. You have to understand what you're doing. And the only way to do that is to practice. It's the only way. So hopefully I have answered the question of how you use the strips to separate airplanes and why we do non-radar at all. You know, but if you have any further questions, you can always contact me at Tom Haynes at Side-by-Side ATC. Be more than happy to answer any specific questions you have. And thank you guys again for listening, for continuing to listen. We're coming up on episode 40, which is amazing to me. And we just passed, a couple of weeks ago, just passed 6 months of the Side-by-Side ATC podcast. And I'm just amazed. And thank you for your support. Thank you for continuing to listen. Thank you for your comments. And as always, if you're at the Academy, hang in there. If you need anything, if you need someone to talk to, the website is Side-by-Side ATC. Set up a time we can talk. My phone number is on there. My email is on there. You don't have to sign up for the coaching program. It is there, and it is available anytime during your time in Oklahoma City. But you don't have to sign up for it. We can talk without you signing up for it. There's no obligation on that. But I just want to help you guys get through it, help you guys not just succeed but excel as you go through it. And so until next week, like I said, hang in there, get better every day, and just realize that we are all in this journey that is air traffic control together. And we will continue to be together. And we will continue to do it side by side. Goodbye.